This flash briefing was made possible by a sponsorship from AveXis, a clinical stage gene therapy company. The following content was not developed by AveXis.
Today is Friday, April 26th, 2019. I'm Michael Morale, Director of Multichannel Content for SMA News Today.
A study showed that when people with SMA are receiving Spinraza into the spinal canal, they do not require higher doses of radiation to monitor the administration. The study was called Radiation Exposure of Image-Guided Intrathecal Administration of Nusinersen to Adult Patients with SMA. It was published in Neuroradiology. SMA is a neurodegenerative disorder. It's characterized by the gradual loss of motor neurons in the spinal cord. These are nerve cells responsible for controlling voluntary muscles, and it leads to muscle weakness. SMA is normally caused by mutations in the SMN1 gene. This gene provides instructions for making the SMN protein that is essential for motor neuron survival. Spinraza is a treatment from Biogen. It works by increasing production of the SMN protein, and it's done by using the SMN2 gene. However, Spinraza cannot cross the blood-brain barrier. This is a highly selective semi-permeable membrane that isolates the brain from the blood that circulates in the body. Because of this, Spinraza must be administered by injection directly into the spinal canal. Since things like scoliosis and spinal torsion make it challenging to administer it into the spine, it is often necessary to rely on image guidance for a successful lumbar puncture. This is accomplished by either CT or fluoroscopy. The issue is that SMA patients are often quite young. CT scans use a certain amount of radiation exposure and therefore pose risks. In this study, researchers from the University Hospital Essen in Germany evaluated patients receiving Spinraza injections into the spinal canal, and specifically, people who were exposed to radiation from the procedure. The study involved 14 patients, 9 with type 2 SMA and 5 with type 3. They had a mean age of 33.6 years old and were treated between August 2017 and June 2018. Altogether, 60 Spinraza treatments were analyzed in the study. Radiological parameters included diagnostic reference levels, or DRLs, achievable dose, AD, and size-specific dose estimates. The effective dose was also calculated. This is the sum of radiation doses absorbed by all the organs in the body. And finally, individual organ radiation was also calculated. Both DRL and AD values were consistent with findings from a previous study. No significant differences in radiation exposure were found between patients with type 2 and type 3 SMA. This suggested that SMA severity does not have a significant impact on the amount of radiation required for these injections. However, patients who had spinal fusion, which is a surgical procedure that fuses spine vertebrae to stabilize and reduce pain, they required higher radiation exposure, and this was compared to those who did not have a spinal fusion. The mean effective dose of all CT-guided Spinraza injections was 2.5 millisievert, or MSV. The most important organs with the highest radiation doses were the following: small intestine, 12.9 MSV, large intestine, 9.5 MSV, ovaries, 3.6 MSV, kidneys, 3.4 MSV, uterus, 3.0 MSV, skin, 2.2 MSV, and red bone marrow at 2.8 MSV. In conclusion, the assessment of DRLs and ADs is essential for dose monitoring and optimization. Despite severe anatomical hazards, the present DRLs show that radiation exposure of SMA patients is generally not higher compared with patients without SMA.
Coming up next, perspectives from SMA News Today community editor Kevin Schaefer.
Are you interested in understanding gene therapy? ExploreGeneTherapy.com has helpful information about gene therapy, including its history and how it is being investigated for the treatment of genetic diseases. Visit www.exploregenetherapy.com.
At SMA News Today, we are excited to welcome several new columnists to our team. On April 15th, 2019, Katie Napawaki made her debut with her column, A Wildflower in the Wilderness. The following is an excerpt from this introductory column. We are all affected by changes that call for us to acclimate to the seasons of our lives. Year after year, a wildflower finds its place under the sun. Spry leaves will droop in heavy sorrow during the drenching spring rains. A sturdy stem will bend in summer whirlwinds that dishevel the flower's petals, but rebound in triumphant revival. From time to time, the wildflower might be trampled beneath the thumping paws of a woodland creature on the sun. Still, a wayward backpacker will stop for an awestruck moment in admiration of the charming bloom before trailing on. As a wildflower weathers the elements of its landscape, its story will always tell of thriving in sun-soaked afternoons. My story began in the heart of Wisconsin during that lovable decade defined by boomboxes, geometrical shoulder pads under sweaters, jazzercise, and really big hair. As an infant, I met all the typical milestones of development until the ticking of the clock signaled my body to walk on its own. It simply didn't happen. That's when my parents began to worry. I was diagnosed with SMA type 2 at 18 months old. To read this column in its entirety, please visit our website at www.smanewstoday.com. I'm Kevin Schaefer, Community Editor for SMA News Today.
The information in our flash briefings and podcast are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. All of our podcast and flash briefings can be found on our website at www.smanewstoday.com. You can also find our podcast and flash briefings on SoundCloud, Spotify, and iTunes. And be sure to follow us on our Instagram and Facebook page as well. For SMA News Today, I'm Michael Morale, Multichannel Content Director.